So now, coming back to the place that Scandinavia invaded, I'm speaking, of course, of the former Danish colony of East Anglia, in which we are now located. As a former colonial resident in the United States, when these people from over here were in charge of us, the Scandinavians were once in charge of the people in Kent and in Essex, who I'm going to invite up with Sir Denis O'Connor, who is a reverse Cromwell Irishman.
And for the we in this colonies bit, as I recall, the Irish didn't do too well in that, Larry. But we're recovering. Yeah, wine on. I just thought the facts might be helpful there, you know, conference, evidence. Anyway, right. In the UK, and I imagine and I expect elsewhere, there is an issue about vulnerability, about what it means, about the dimensions about it, about whether you can operationalize it. And it's huge issue politically. It's an enormous issue in resources. If you can't put your hands around something, how do you nail it down? How do you do things about it? So here we've got two different dimensions, really. Firstly, Andy Featherstone, who absolutely determined, wanted to see if he could get to grips with it in relation to children and child referrals. Secondly, it might not immediately grab you as vulnerability, but there are criminals who prey on the weaker criminals in the marketplace and cross boundaries to do it. Because, Larry, you know what? They're very good at, turns out, at targeting and tracking. And they do a damn good job. So you've got two great presentations to come, starting with Andy.
Right, well, this is going to be a tough gig. Last day of the conference, second to last, but I will try and make it as interesting as I possibly can for you. As it says above, my name's Andy Featherstone. I'm from a force in the UK called Kent, which is in the southeast of England. And yeah, as Sir Denis said, took on this this huge project effectively around children, trying to identify vulnerability. And really a tip for the year twos on this one, just be careful what you pick as a subject, because in September, I moved to a new job, which is in charge of the vulnerability investigation team. Now, that would be okay if I actually had a background and experience in vulnerability investigation, but I don't. So writing one paper now qualifies me to be in charge of that unit, which I'd be interested, actually, if the overseas system is exactly the same, because it seems to be here in the UK, that's kind of what happens. Chief officers have sit around and say things such as, oh, well, Dave, you like computers, you can be in charge of cybercrime. So that's basically it. So let's talk about vulnerability then. So in terms of, I'll try and put this in a bit of context for you, but the culture here in the UK is very much, the UK officers would no doubt understand this, we're dominated at the moment by vulnerability and in particular child vulnerability. There's a stat there for you, around 14% of all children at risk of abuse. That was a stat when I wrote it, which was back in 2015, which was around 2 million children at the time. But the reality is we don't actually know. We don't really know the true figure. And there's two fundamental reasons for that. One, because we as police and agencies are reliant on someone reporting a child being abused. So that's either the child themselves, which are often either too young to have contact with us, or they don't actually understand that they're being a victim. Or the second reason is these children perhaps are being their guardians, parents, people in positions of trust who look after them are often the actual people who are doing the abuse. So they're two fundamental reasons why we actually really don't know the true figure of what this problem is. But in terms of that word vulnerability, it's a really interesting one, and I don't know if it's been a word used overseas, but in the UK it's the police buzzword. And it's stuck around for the last 18 months, and Sir Denis touched on it this morning. It was a real problem for my thesis, is trying to actually understand what that word means. And you know that it's a proper police word because it's got two clear characteristics. The first one is that no one can actually tell you what it means. And the second one is, although no one can actually tell you what it means, everyone in every single meeting uses the word. So that's what makes it a proper police word. And the third one, you know you're in real problems when they start naming teams after it, which is the one I start in September. So the problem with this is, as I say, there's 11 versions currently of what vulnerability means in the UK. So 11 forces, there's two general ones, but there's 9 forces that went off and decided to write their own definition of what vulnerability means. And that causes us a real problem, because you could be vulnerability in one part of the UK, but vulnerable in one part of the UK, but not necessarily in another, and it's a real problem. And actually, when you start to delve down into some of these versions, they're really, really wishy-washy type things. You could pretty much make that chair vulnerable if you really wanted to. It's quite poor. But and the problem is, of us as agencies, we're being held to account by agencies such as the HMRC, and of course the public, that we've got to identify these children or other people, vulnerable people, with our error. I think Jerry touched on it earlier. That's the expectation. You know, there was no room for error. And I think I've got it up there on the slide around, we've seen these, particularly in the UK the last couple of years, the scandals that we've seen. The Catholic Church, the BBC, local councils, and most recently the Football Association, people in positions of trust and these institutions that have been involved, allegedly, in child abuse. So that's the context of what this research was all about. So research questions were as such. So how often do bad outcomes occur within 3 years of a DA child referral? So what I was looking at specifically around referrals with DA, so this is children exposed to a DA incident, and off the back of that there's a referral to social services, and how many of those children referred in the following 3 year period did something bad happen to the child. So so the first question was the frequency of that. The second question was about notifications and referrals. This is a really important point, because in Kent there's two different types of referrals. There's what's called a police referral, and the meaning of that is if the child gets a police referral, it means there's going to be an intervention by social services. The police is saying to social services, you need to do something. A notification is just us just telling social services something happened where a child was present. Yep. So there's no requirement on the social services to make an intervention. But of course, the point in notifying them is they may know something you don't about the child, which enables them to do so if they wish. Now, that becomes really important when we start to look at the results. But the worst thing about that, which follows on to the third question, the methodology for deciding whether you get a police referral or a notification is based on the dash score of the incident that the child was exposed to. This is in Kent. I don't know if this is the same for all other forces. But even without knowing anything about DASH and the evidence, and I'm sure you've heard lots of it in the last few days, even if you know nothing about DASH, what you do know is DASH is meant to be about a couple in a relationship or an intimate relationship. So what that's got to do with the risk of a child, straight away you're questioning. So in this context, what happens is if the incident that the child was exposed to was a high incident, they get a police referral. And if it was a medium or a standard, they'd get a notification. The only time a medium would turn into a referral is if there was 3 in a year. So absolutely no science around this whatsoever, and just using one tool from one part of the policing and applying it to the other with no tool pretty much whatsoever. So this was tested, obviously, the cohort that I looked at was children in 2012 that were referred to social services for either of the two reasons, and followed for a rolling 3 year period. So there was about, we get around 13,000 referrals a year, and about 7,000 of those specifically related to DA, but they are definitely going up, and they have gone up since I've done this research. So for the first question, I mentioned about the 5 bad outcomes, so this is what we were looking for. So those children that were referred, did any of the following things happen to them? First thing was further incidents, so the child was exposed to further domestic abuse. The second thing were that the child went on to become a suspect on a crime board, so they're suspected of committing a crime, so they're an offender. The child went on to suffer some sort of victimisation. The child went missing, and then the last one was the cumulative, if any of the above happened. So they were the 5 things we were looking for. And these were the results. So there were 6,670 unique cases. So those children that were multiply referred during that same year were taken out. So we took the first referral for the year. There were 6,670 unique cases. And you can see from the table, so in the different columns on here, so that's the number of children, or the number, the frequency, and then we've got the cumulative, so on and so forth. But so what that actually says is, you can see at the top, the 78, so one child was responsible for 78 bad outcomes. You've then got at the bottom, so the zero, no bad outcomes, 3,484 children didn't go on to experience any outcome. So 3,186 did. So that was at 48%. So 48% of the whole cohort went on to experience a bad outcome, which is a lot higher than I thought it would be. It was a lot of children. As I say, they were unique children, not multiple referrals. So what we start to see is a type of power relationship. And I think this column here, this is the cumulative effect. So what you see here is 10% of children were responsible for 50% of it. 28% were responsible, sorry, 16.9% responsible for nearly 70%, and 28% of children responsible for 84%. You've almost got your 80-20 rule there, and certainly start to see this power relationship that obviously Larry has written about, and many people have spoken about, I'm sure, in the last 3 days. So in the represented in a chart slightly, you start to see that power curve. Not as strongly as we might want, but that's the reality of the data. So in total, there were just over 8,000 bad outcomes experienced by those 3,000 children. But the most interesting thing from that, and more represented in that table, I think, is the fact that they were definitely not distributed evenly. So what we consider, 41% of all the children only had one bad outcome. So they only experienced something, a bad outcome once. Whereas 12 children, you should be able to see that there, the cumulative children, 12 children were responsible for over 500 of the bad outcomes. So if, again, we talk about that power relationship and concentration, that is obviously, would be your natural starting point. And so that brings us on to the question. So what, I'll need your help on this one. So there's three of these slides, and every time this comes on, I need you to say, so what? So this is,
so what? Go on.
Well, Sir Dennis, I'm glad you asked that question. I think so what is actually that these bad outcomes to children is far more prevalent than we may have realised, both academics and practitioners. And but the problem being, with such a large number of children experiencing bad outcomes, where do you start? You can't be expecting social services to intervene on every one of those children. So what that's telling us is that you can't really treat these children as equal. You're going to have to take this targeted approach to how you make these interventions. And perhaps some of the starting point is around this, trying to pick off and take that targeted approach to those children who are likely or are going to experience the most harm. But that brings us on to sort of the next question, which is, although we can see there's a concentration in harm, what makes a child more vulnerable than another? And that's effectively, in layman's terms, what question two is about. So we looked at a combination of 15 factors that was trying to establish a relationship between the factors and the bad outcomes. And they were split into two main groups. So these were the trigger factors and the prior factors. The trigger factors are basically the factors around the referral. So they're the things that we knew at the point of referral. And as I said before, that's how social services are deciding whether to do anything or not. You'll see incident was a crime or not. What that means is in Kent, we don't just record crimes, we record what we call secondary incidents. So if a couple has an argument, but it's not an actual crime, there's no crime being committed, that still goes down. It's recorded as if it was a crime, but it's called a secondary incident. And so that was in there as a factor because many, many domestics are recorded as that. There's no actual crime being committed. And then, obviously, the reason the DASH score's in there is because that's how SS have decided on whether they're going to do anything or not. We then got the prior factors, and that's effectively the history of the child, or if there is a history. So this is the overall results of this was any of the bad outcomes. So did the children experience any bad outcomes? I'll just explain this very quickly. You've got all of the factors there, both trigger and priors. true means that it actually happened. So that's a yes, the fact it was present and there was a bad outcome for us as it stands. Statistical significance, we'll come on to that in a sec. And then odds ratio, and so odds ratio is basically, was it one, two, three or four times more likely to happen? So one is even, so either way, it could have gone either way. If it's less, so 0 point, it means it was more likely not to have happened, so if that factor was present. And then obviously anything above one, it makes it more likely to happen. So significance, I'll just touch on slightly, I know Jeff's favourite subject. Just so you know, particularly the police students, there's two versions of what significance means. There's Jeff's version, which is the academic one, which is that something happened by chance, something didn't happen by chance. So what we're looking for in this is something, a value lower than 0.05. So what we can say is it's absolutely significant that whatever the factor is didn't happen by chance. However, there's a police version of significance, which was my one, which was when I arrived, which is the same version that every commander has used at every single meeting in the history of operational policing, which is when you're asked how your operation's going, you say, I can categorically tell you, sir, ma'am, that my operation is having a significant impact. Which actually means I've got no idea what's going on, I've got no data or evidence to support it, but I've spent too much money and resource for it to be a failure. This is Jeff's version, by the way, on the data here. So the what we can see here is you've got the child and gender is not really relevant, and then you come down to the trigger incident. So what was interesting on that one, a no crime was slightly more likely bad things to happen if it was a no crime than a crime, which was really interesting because I think intuitively police officers ascribe more severity to a crime than the no crime. So that was a really interesting one, that actually kids went on to have, was more likely to have a bad outcome from a no crime incident. But you can see that particularly the trigger ones are not very strong. And then when you start to get into the prior ones, they give you a much stronger reading. So a prior incident was double, a referral was twice, the child was twice as likely. Same for the notification. And here you've got the dash scores as well. Whereas in the trigger ones, you can see a standard dash means less likely, so it was in keeping with its score. But when you're talking about prior, it doesn't matter what dash score you've had. If you've had any type of prior domestic as a child exposed to it, you're twice as likely to go on to experience something bad. So the next one, so what we then did was to examine these results in isolation into each of the four bad outcomes, and this is where it became really interesting. Further incidents, where there wasn't much difference, to be honest, because further incidents made up the majority of the bad outcomes, and so the results fairly reflected the overall result. There was only two things that were different. This is the first time that age became relevant, albeit it's still fairly weak, but a child 12 or over was less likely to experience more DA, which was, but as I say, it was fairly weak. But age is a really interesting one. Keep that one in mind because we're going to talk a lot about age. The next one, we're going to talk about offending. So this was the results of the offending one. As you can see, failed to mention asterisks means where it's statistically significant. So rather than don't worry about that column, just look for the asterisks. So what we can see here for offending is particularly for the child, a child's age, a child over 12 was 13 times more likely to go on to offend having been exposed, been referred for a DA incident, which is exceptionally strong. And you can see from the other scores or the other odds ratios, none of them are anywhere near as high as that. Now, you might say it's kind of, in the UK specifically, is a little bit self-fulfilling because the criminal age of responsibility in the UK is 10, so you would expect to see children over 12 committing crime because you're not going to see it for under 10 anyway. So, but we'll come back to that again in a second. You see there, dash makes an appearance in the trigger one, 1.4 times more likely to occur. And then again, you see the priors, which are higher, you've got the referral twice as likely, and then at the bottom, you've got the any child with a history of prior child abuse is likely to go on to offend, twice as likely to go on to offend. So the next one is victimisation, and this is where, again, the age became interesting, because on this occasion, again, you'll see less. The reason, by the way, that there's the factors are less significant is because when you start to break things down, you start to lose the power, the statistical power, so it's harder to find the significance. Whereas the overall outcome, there were so many cases, it was a lot easier. But when you do the individual one, slightly harder. But what we can see there is age is still relevant for victimisation. Whereas offending, there's a condition with age. There isn't with victimisation. You can be victimised at any age, it doesn't matter. But still here, a child 12 or over is 10 times more likely to be a victim as well. And then again, we see our prior factors. Again, any type of referral leaves you twice as likely to go on to be a victim. And we see Dash make just high Dash on this occasion, 2.5 times more likely, and again that child abuse one at the bottom. So the last one was missing. Again, smaller group still, harder to find that significance. But again, look, age is still there. 8 times more likely, a child 12 or over, 8 times more likely to go missing than a child under 12 who's been referred for DA. Again, we see the same two prior factors appear, same type of results, almost twice as likely on an incident, more so on the referral. And yet again, that child abuse one at the bottom. And the thing you've probably noted at this point, Dash doesn't even appear now at all, whether it's in the trigger or the priors. But we'll come back to Dash because I know Larry will want to speak about that. And then we did means tests. I'm not going to go through these because the means tests were a lot weaker. Basically, what the means test was, we were trying to work out how many actual bad outcomes do we think they'd have. So trying to give an average. So would it be 2, would it be 4, would it be 10? We're trying to give a specific number rather than it just more likely or not to happen. But we did all these tests. I won't go through them all because there was a lot of the effect size, which is what you see at the end, the Cohen's D section, that they were fairly weak. So any 2s, 1s, that 0.21, that's weak. You start to get to what might be considered moderate, 0.3 and upwards, but not overly worth talking about. But I did pick out some of the key bits from it, and they were this. You've got the prior incident, 2.5 times more offending if there'd been a prior incident. Any history of prior child abuse was associated with a child committing on average 3.5 more times. And that was the same for missing. But you'll see again, this age thing appears once again. A child 12 or over perpetrated on average 23 times more offences. In terms of victimisation, they experienced 9 times more. And for the missing 17, these were strong figures coming through. So what we decided to do was have a closer look at age, because what we were concerned about, so because we picked 12 and over, was that us with some sort of selection bias now affecting the results? So what we did, we looked at every year of age and broke that down. And you'll see from the graph there that you're pretty much consistent. On the left there, you've got the number of bad outcomes, obviously one, pretty much consistent, and then bang, when you get to this 12, it does go up. So we were quite happy, actually, that we were right to pick 12 as a key point in terms of the age bracket that we looked at, and I'm sure Heather can give us much better evidence of why that might be, and Jeff and I spoke about lots of social theory around this is the time when a child starts secondary school, they have more freedoms, they're building different type of relationships and establishing new bonds and relationships, but perhaps that's for another day. But main thing was we were satisfied that we'd picked the right age.
So what?
Yeah, well,
I'm looking at the time as well.
Okay, we're nearly there, we're not far off now. These are the three main findings. So trigger factors versus prior factors. It was absolutely clear from the pattern that prior factors has much better, was much more consistent and was stronger at predicting these bad outcomes based on those factors. So if particularly in Ken, if we're going to look at anything to decide which children are likely to go on to experience harm, it's the history of a child, not the time, not the circumstances around the incident of which they were referred. And actually, if we think about whether it's in criminal justice or policing. That's how we do everything else. When we look at, when we want to charge an offender, when we look at potentially sending someone to prison, we don't just look at that, what happened. We look at their history. What have they done before? How is this? What else has been going on? And I think perhaps we've missed a trick there. I think age speaks for itself about, I've already mentioned how strong age was coming through those results, and definitely that needs to be included in the policy. Around 12 is that key point, perhaps around assistance, intervention, diversion, whatever label we want to give it, that appears to be the point in which we should be getting involved. And then I just touched on crime, incident, no crime. It wasn't the strongest of the results, but it definitely threw one up more around police culture than anything, where the no crime incidents, we tend to go, oh, well, yeah, that's not really that interesting, no crime. And then finally, Larry's favourite subject, DASH. So what about DASH? What were the results for that? So they were just the trigger and the prior DASH. What we found from the trigger, there was a very weak relationship with further DA incidents. You might just say that that's self-fulfilling anyway, because that's the assessment. There was no relationship found between DASH and victimisation or missing. And then when it was examined as a remain outcome, it was an unreliable predictor. And then for the prior DASH, yes, there was a significant relationship found with DASH, prior DASH. However, none of it stuck to its ascribed levels. Medium DASH was the strongest predictor of further incidents. All levels of DASH were associated with experiencing all of the bad outcomes. Prior standard DASH saw a child experience more incidents than a child with prior high DASH. And overall, the overall result was children with prior, medium and standard were more vulnerable than children with high DASH. So the last...
So what?
Well, so that is the last so what is that in the context of assessing risk to children exposed to DA, DASH is proved to be consistently unreliable.
Outstanding.